Welcome to the world of Muscle Smoke and Mirrors, where it's all about muscle, health, history, training, nutrition, bodybuilding, and state of mind.
Hey, listener, you're back with another episode of the World of Muscle with Tamash and Randy.
Hey, my Randy. Good today, Monday morning.
Monday morning. It's not the Monday morning after the Mr. America, but the week after.
Yeah, well, we had to assimilate the whole process, so we're ready to talk about it now.
Yes, we're ready to give our opinions and our experience.
We'll get right into it. Like, I mean, it was a beautiful weekend. Like, we couldn't ask for better weather. I'm not a guy who sits in the car, drives a lot, but I think it took us about 4 hours to go down. No problem at the border. We got there fine.
Bought some Scooby snacks along the way.
They're always good. And the atmosphere of the show I found was actually pretty good. It wasn't this great big event, but I found it just as somebody observing through listening. I got a good vibe, and you know, probably coming off the fact that there was a good boat. I'll go through the names. About 10 of the guest stars from old bodybuilders from the 70s. Let's see. Correct me if I miss anybody.
Hang on. Once we got there, okay. We met your friend Jim McBride, and he knew exactly where the location was because the hotel was a whopping 2-minute drive away from the event.
Yeah, and Jim. Jim is a friend of mine. He's also a longtime friend of Pete Grimkowski's. He actually trained with Pete back in the early 70s. And Jim lives in Rochester, and he comes up often to visit. Another good friend of mine, Mike Petrella, who runs STG Strength and Power out of St. George. So Mike Petrella and his girlfriend also went down for the show.
Yeah, they came a little bit later. Yeah. But Jim was saying how he actually trained Pete for the 72 Miss America, which is kind of the – if I remember correctly, it could have been 71, but it was 70. I remember 72.
Yeah, well, Pete competed in the 71, 72, and 73.
Yes. Came in so he led us to the right place, and literally less than a minute, we're walking in through the booths. There's booths set up in the hallway, and someone stops us, says, is this Randy Roach? I'm like, yes.
No, he said, didn't he say, who's this guy?
Oh, yes. Sorry, you're right. Who is this guy? And I look up at him, and this is Randy Roach, kind of startled. And he starts smiling. So I figure that, okay, he's someone that knows you already.
Yeah, I knew who it was by his voice already.
Okay, so you knew who it was. I didn't because I never heard his voice before.
It was Ken Sprague.
And then he introduced himself as Ken Sprague, and
introduced us to his wife, Donna, very nice lady. And she's also retired. Then she came up with Ken and to take in the show. And shall we go through some of the names?
We were standing right in front of a booth. And as I look back, there was a lot of Frank Zane books and pictures on the wall. So we happened to just literally run into each other in front of Frank Zane's booth, but there was no one in Frank Zane's booth at that time.
Yeah.
Then, as we're talking to Ken, a whole bunch of other people came around. It was kind of a crowd, and some of them I recognized and some I didn't right away. And
some I didn't know. They came up to me and they knew who I was from the book,
which yes.
Kind of surprised me. But that was nice. I got to talk to a few guys. So a couple from NABBA were there.
Frank Meyer and...
Rich
Palatino.
Palatino or something like that. Big guy.
Yes,
you can tell even without seeing him, he's a big guy. But again, we'll go through the names real quick.
Right around Frank Zane's booth later on came pretty much everyone gathered around. And do you want to go ahead who you ran into first?
I think it was you introduced me to Frank, then Roger Callard. I've never met Roger or talked with Roger before, but he was a real pleasant surprise, a really warm guy, really nice guy. And I think Karen Clark, Wayne DeMay's ex-wife, I think that's that point. She was there helping out and doing photography, and she instructed all the guys to go to the back gym. I think she had that studio.
Yeah, we hailed her down. I remember hailing her down to come on over because we had spoken with her, or you had spoken with her. I emailed her a couple of times, and then she started gathering the troops. She's like, hey, Ken Waller, come on over. And Danny Padilla and Red Larrill. She was like, oh, Red's supposed to be here somewhere. And I pointed it a little bit, maybe 6-7 feet away, I thought was Red. And
I thought I heard a Louisiana accent from somebody in the not too distant. But so there was Frank, there was Roger, there was Ken Waller, there was Ken Sprague. Ken Sprague had left to go back to his hotel for a while. Danny Padilla was there. Jim Morris was there. I mentioned Red Larrill.
So Karen starts kind of taking over because we were in a cramped space and said, guys, let's go into where the photo shoots were happening, right in front of a green screen. It was a black screen in the gymnasium, the big space. So everyone starts following her. She just kind of orders them around and sets you up in the middle of the photo shoot, and everyone gathers around you. And if you've seen Randy's Facebook page, there's a photo of almost everyone. Frank wasn't there yet. He came a little later, Frank Zane. But we had Roger Callard, Jim Morris. That's where Jim Morris showed up. He came a little bit later. He wasn't in that circle where we were gathering around earlier.
No, because I only met him when the funny thing was when she took that shot and I started to kind of scramble away. She told me to stand still, stay there. And I thought, I was in the way. So I thought, I'll just stand back here out of the way. And then I didn't realize she was ordering all these guys to come in one by one to take a shot with me. It took me about two of them to figure that out. So I thought that was pretty cool. I thank Karen for
it. Mind you, just to clarify that, she wasn't really ordering them. They wanted to take a picture with you. Told them how, where to stand and all that stuff, right? They literally took turns to take a picture with you.
Well, it was really cool regardless of how it happened. It took me a while to figure out what was going on. Like, I really, honestly, I thought I was in the way. I was being told to stand back.
I know, you were walking away.
Yeah, so we got some good pics that we'll probably be putting up. Will we be putting those up on Facebook or what?
Yeah.
Okay, so that was cool. Then I bought Frank's new book, and we took in Frank's seminar. It was kind of a long seminar, but it was interesting. Frank, it was kind of a general seminar aimed at everybody from primarily any age group. But
what I got out of it was more of what he's doing now, as opposed to how he got where he got.
Exactly, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
It was mostly, this is what I do now. This is what I used to do, and here I am, and these are the plans for the future.
It was with Frank, at 73, it was good to see that he still gets excited about what he does, as a bodybuilder. It's one thing I like with some of the older guys I meet, they're still into bodybuilding, right? It's not, they haven't just said, oh, hell, well, that's something I did 30, 40 years ago, I don't want to touch it anymore, somewhere like that. That's their business, what they want to do, but Frank's still into it, and did a seminar, and then what did we do? We went back for a little to eat at the hotel before we went back for the night show. Like I said, it wasn't a huge event, but it still had a good vibe about it.
It was like nothing happened. They were talking to each other about the old stuff as if it happened yesterday. Ken Waller looked really good.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize him because he had white hair. I was expecting red hair.
Yeah.
But his hair was all white.
You said Danny was huge?
Danny was probably the most muscular guy there.
Quite big. We have a funny photo. Karen took a good shot of my buddy Mike Petrella. He's 6'4", and I think Danny's 5'2". Danny's a really good sport, and he's a good guy.
He's very fun to talk with him.
Yeah, you said you enjoyed him. Would have liked to listen to Danny for several hours.
And that's what it was. We were just watching or listening to them talk as we're taking pictures, and they're sharing stories. And I think you even clarified something for Danny about the 75.
Well, it was fascinating because we were standing about 6 feet, and he was talking to Ken, And I have nothing to do but stand there and listen because I can't see anything. And I heard Danny talking to Ken about that 75 universe because I had talked with – I had interviewed Danny about the 75 universe and Mike Katz over the fact that not that many people know that Danny was bumped from the American universe team in 1975 so that Ken Waller and Mike Katz, two heavyweights, participated as opposed to a heavyweight in Ken Waller, a middleweight in Robbie Robinson, and a lightweight in Danny. And he was discussing that with Ken, and I went in and I interjected because I had information that I knew Danny would be interested in, and I'm not going to say what it is right now, so you're going to have to read it because it is in book one, and it kind of may resolve some of the issue that happened there. So it was fun in that way. I could have just sat there all day and just, you know, listen to these guys shoot the shit and talk because they it was their glory days. And even during the show when they did some presentations at the night show, you were mentioning that you could tell that Ken Sprague and Ken Waller were getting a kick out because they were elbowing each other as they saw themselves up on screen from like 40 something years ago and stuff. So
yeah, they had a few pictures in the history of Mr. America video. So I cut you off when you mentioned we went back for some food. Later on, went down to the lounge of the hotel and met up with Ken Sprague and Donna.
Yeah, got a chance to talk there.
And we spoke with them for a little bit before it was time to go and watch the show.
Yeah, we had second row. What, were you in the second row?
We were in the second row.
Yeah, my biggest problem with the show was I didn't know how close I was to the speaker. And it just blasted right through me. That's one of the very few times I can sit through anything. I didn't think I was going to make it. Now, you offered a couple times to haul me out of there if I needed to, and I just about a couple times said, okay, I get it. Apparently, Jim Morris did. He had to get out. They had a band there, and it was too close to that speaker, and every time they hit that bass, it just feels like it vibrates right through you. Now, the show, what did you say, Tomas? About 200, 250 people there?
Roughly.
Yeah, that's family members. And this is one of the problems. The competitors from the general consensus is that the competitors were fine. A couple up there, a few looked like they may have been on steroids. But the competitors were fine. They weren't outlandish or anything like that. And there's no dispute actually over who won. But it brings us into this next segment that we're going to talk about here is what we think, or I think, and Tomas can interject his feelings as well, what they have to do to improve this, because that amount of people in the audience is not acceptable. Mr. America is not going to go anywhere. And one of the problems, in my opinion, right off the bat was, and many agree with me, that it wasn't advertised. And I'm not quite sure why.
They only had 3 months since the idea was born. To run it
this is true.
Year.
They only had 3 months, but still, in 3 months, there still wasn't adequate advertisement. There's still many people who had no idea it was running and who should have known the show was running. And somebody asked me, was this just a private show, like a one-off thing? And I said, no, it is supposed to be a kind of like a Mr. America reboot. And again, the way they're running it now, it's not going to work, in my opinion. The Mr. America was almost rebooted 5 years ago. Bob Bonham ran a couple shows, but they're very low key. Wayne D'Amelio had got involved briefly, and he was going to bring it up, but he had wanted to do it his way. He did not own the trademark. Bob Bonham did. So Wayne didn't have bottom line say, but he wanted to do it in a certain way in terms of publicity, advertising, and the way the audience, their target audience, they're going to hit. And I was made privy to a lot of what was going on. Of course, I had my opinions, and Wayne had his ideas. And a lot of people have ideas. Ken Sprague has piped in because Sprague ran that Mr. America 1977 that still has not been surpassed with that parade that was second only to the Rose Bowl parade that year. I think Ken drew 3,000 people in the pre-judging and another 3,000 in the night show. I'm pretty sure. And to check those numbers, it doesn't matter. But they didn't get anywhere near this here. Only a couple hundred, and you're going to lose money running it that way. But they can't compete with the NPC. And Joe Weider couldn't do that. When it was the AAU, Dan Lurie and Joe through the 60s and 70s, they could not compete with the AAU. They tried with Weider had his ABBA and his AFAB, you know, to go for amateur bodybuilding in America. They couldn't until politics, change of law, and Ken Sprague handed the Weiders the AAU, which became the NPC. And that's the big nationwide structure of amateur bodybuilding. And the way amateur bodybuilding is today, it's it's just not right. It's almost incestuous. It's basically, they're making all their money off the competitors. They have a million different categories. They can draw up to 1,000 competitors. Some of the competitors paying over $400 because they can compete in multiple different categories. And then the audience is basically the family members. So that sport's not going to run itself like that. You know, back in the 70s and 80s, bodybuilding drew all sorts, you know, especially in the pros. Like, very few of them were family members. They're all just general public coming in because they want to see bodybuilding. And that's just not the way it is today. Another problem is, you know, the NPC is full of steroids. It has to be, because these athletes are vying for pro cards to compete in basically a drug-drenched IFBB. So basically, I feel if they want to be successful, they have to make the American Mr. America brand targeted at a whole different audience based on, okay, who is Mr. America? And you have to go back maybe a little bit to some of the 1950s and say, okay, Mr. America, he's got to be a good-looking guy. He's got to be marketable. He has to be intelligent. He has to be athletic, and he has to be well-built. You know, the physique should probably be scored more along the lines of symmetry, size, muscularity, in that order. They can do many things. You and I were talking and debating about the athletic events. One of the things that would keep the athletes from trying to get too ripped is to have them perform certain feats of strength on contest weekend, because typically when you get ripped, you don't have that strength, and you're not going to be looking for that rip look, because typically those guys do not look that great in the face and stuff if they get too far. But it's got to be symmetry. They have to really look good. And I know with Wayne and Ken Sprague, I believe even Jeff Everson had commented over the years that to get a better, bigger sponsors, they could add, how do these guys look decked out? You know, like Miss America, how do they look in a casual wear? You're going to get clothing sponsors now, much bigger names and stuff, because this guy is going to be marketable when, you know, whoever you pick, today's, look at Mr. Olympia, right? Do you think these guys are marketable? You know,
within the industry only. They're not that marketable to the general public, because they kind of look too freakish for them and more of a circus sideshow.
Yeah. And the Mr. America, if they want to be successful, they have to get away from that. They have to be able to draw a big audience, and they have to have a show that they have big sponsors in, and they're getting thousands of people there, not hundreds, but thousands of people there. And the only way you can do that is to have good looking athletes who are very, very marketable outside of bodybuilding. So how do you do that? Well, it's just the way you score it. Like, I mean, you have to have, Mr. America should be educated. He should be either a college degree and or successful in business outside of traffic and steroids, that kind of business. But you know what I mean? He's got to be successful. He can't, I would say you only win the Mr. America once, and that's it.
Let me, when you say educated, do they have to be educated or do they have to be intelligent?
Well, that's what I said. They have to be able to express their intelligence either through an education or through a successful business.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to necessarily be a university education or college. If Buddy's built up a good business on his own, he's obviously intelligent, right, and well-spoken. You know, they got to be able to put a couple of sentences together, you know, and in terms of – they also have to be strong in athletic. You could – like, these things could all be thought out in for athletic points. They could maybe inherit some percentage of points from, say, a successful college career in track and field or football, or, you know, a CrossFit success or something like that. But they still would have to perform some athletic events or feats on contest weekend. Now, you and I were debating over that, because I'm not a big fan of the Olympic lifts outside of weightlifting. But we know that they have been kind of revamped with the CrossFit guys. So we could build a pool of strength events that they could pick from. And there would say, I'm just throwing them out there. Like, it could be the two Olympic lifts. It could be, and the three power lifts. It could be 20 chins, 20 dips. I always like what I thought was so strong arms was the strict curl. We used to put, Chet Yorton used to talk about the curl contest they would have, where they had to put the hips and the shoulders against a bar or a post, and you can't move, and you just a strict curl up to show how strong your arms are. Little things like that, where they could pick them, whichever ones they want, but they have to perform them on contest day. So we don't have these guys just diet it down for that one day, because Mr. America should look good all year round and should be able to perform all year round.
And that's what the Mr. America represents, right? Health and vitality anytime. Yeah. Just like Miss America, really, in the pageant.
Yeah, he can even hope for world peace.
Yes.
But, you know, okay, so the next question is, okay, like Wayne and Ken and those always bring up, okay, you need a feeder system. You need a feeder system. Well, it's hard to go build from a ground grassroots level a feeder system of a network of an organization with a network of statewide competitions. I think for Mr. America, they could already approach existing networks within the CrossFit community and within the natural bodybuilding community. They are existing federations that have been out there for a long time. They could approach them in a very uninvasive manner and say, listen, you guys got good athletes and they're natural. They're supposed to be natural. Would you be interested in running state level Mr. America qualifiers to send your representatives to vie for the annual Mr. America contest? I don't have all the answers for that, but I mean, this is one approach that they could take. Ken didn't think there should be any drug testing. Don't bring any focus to it. I think it should be drug tested, and I agree it shouldn't bring focus to it. They could do it low key, but I think anytime you go to the mainstream media and you have a Mr. This in front of it, the question is going to come up, is he taking drugs? And you have to be able to say Mr. America is not taking drugs, and we've tested him, right? But you don't have to bring it up until it's brought up itself. So I think it can be done in a low key manner. So there's a lot of things that could be done here if the energy is behind it. I want to talk to Pete Grimkowski maybe next week and see where they are and what they're thinking of doing and how they analyze the event and on August 8th and what they feel to how they're going to move forward.
Well, the plan is to have it next year in Washington, D.C.
Yep, that's where Bruce Ebel is. Bruce is Pete's, I think, partner in this. I think it's actually Bruce who has the trademark. And Bruce is a very successful business guy, and he has like 12 goals, Jim. Very nice guy. We got to meet him. That's what I mean. With these guys, there's a lot of experience, and they have money. And look, at Pete and his group, a former group, and his brother, Paul, and others, they built Gold's Gym on an international level. So they know marketing. Excuse me. That's what kind of has a few people stymied over the lack of advertising and marketing in this Mr. America event, if that's because they know how to do it and they do have the resources. So they could really make this thing fly. These are just our ideas. Like, I mean, it is it's their company. It's their trademark. It's up to them which direction. But I still think to fight against the NPC, you're dead. You're dead. It's just the wrong way to go.
Time will tell. That's the only thing that we'll just wait and see what they do with it. And yeah, I haven't heard anything from their side and how successful they thought it went.
No, I thought I'd get Pete, absorb it and, see what he felt and stuff. But all in all, I'm glad I went down. You know, it was great to meet the guys. And like I said, it had a good vibe to it. And I got to meet Ken Waller. I'd never spoken to Ken Waller. And I got to meet Roger Callard. And I'm going to be talking to Roger today because he's just a really nice guy.
So, yes, he was. He seemed very genuine, authentic, and
yeah,
all around good guy. Yeah. So did everyone.
Yes, so that's basically our little synopsis of the Mr. America and our trek down there.
So one question.
Sure.
If you had to do it over again, would you go?
With that short a distance for it? Yeah, I would go. I wouldn't want to get on a plane.
No, I mean this whole thing. Like, was it enjoyable enough for you to like go and do it again?
Yeah, just minus the big speaker beside me blasting my head off there. Yeah, yeah. I had fun.
Did you ever find your cane?
No. Oh. Folks, I've been without my white cane since I've been back here. So yeah, I've been taking a bit of a beating down there, down in the gym. But no, actually, I've had my sight is, I get some ups and downs, and I was able to actually see that Mike Katz photo I sent you. Mm-hmm. We have a photo of Mike Katz in 1981, Mr. O. And Mike said he was drug free. That's one of the main reasons he competed. Some people thought he came back to compete against Ken Waller. But he did, but he wanted to do it drug-free. And I was able to see that day, not clear or anything, but to see that photo. So I haven't had...
We're going to include that in the book.
Yes. Yes. And we are going to get a cover and the prologue and the back cover out as a package.
This week?
Yep. And we also have that H&S bio. We got a few things we got to get out, but Tomas had a very, very busy week last week with other things, but this week we're going to get geared up and get everything going again.
This week, everything's going to get done.
Okay.
It's Monday morning, so.
Have a good week.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Thank you for listening to The World of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. We hope you've enjoyed the content of this episode, and we're looking forward to sharing more next time.